will be able to protect itself in South Korea. President Obama heads west today. NPR's Giles Snyder reports that in Denver, Colorado, he'll sound his call again for Congress to pass universal background checks and other gun safety regulations.
The president is expected to hold Colorado up as an example of what can be done on gun legislation. It's a state with a frontier history where many people cherish gun ownership. State lawmakers recently expanded background checks and placed restrictions on magazines. Obama is to meet with law enforcement officials and community leaders in Denver, not far from last summer's movie theater shooting. Next week, the president plans to travel to Connecticut, where state lawmakers have announced agreement on gun legislation following the mass shooting in Newtown. The Connecticut trip comes just ahead of the planned start of debate on gun legislation in the Senate. Giles Snyder, NPR News, Washington.
I'm Paul Brown, and this is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, working to help communities get healthier, online at countyhealthrankings.org.
WILL programming is made possible by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, presenting trumpet phenom Allison Balsam and Scottish Ensemble on Thursday, April 18th at 7:30 p.m. in the Fullinger Great Hall. For more information, visit krannertcenter.com or call 217-333-6280.
Welcome to Focus. I'm Jim Meadows, and we're talking today about the problem of homelessness, a problem you can find existing nationwide, but we're going to focus on how it exists in Champaign-Urbana, what's being done to address it, and the challenges that are involved. Our guests are Beverly Baker. She's Director of Community Impact at the United Way of Champaign County. One of the agencies the United Way works with is the Center for Women in Transition. Its executive director is Nancy Hyatt, who's also here with us today. And our third guest knows firsthand what it's like to be homeless. She's Linnell Loy. She used to be homeless. She's now receiving services and shelter from the Center for Women in Transition. And good morning to you all. Thank you for joining me on Focus today.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Linnell, I was wondering if I could just ask you, how did you become homeless?
Well, I've been actually addicted to drugs and alcohol for the last 25 years, and I was on a downward spiral with that for a long time. I eventually ended up losing my kids to DCFS. I had nowhere to go. I did have some friends to stay with, but that was my drug-using friends. And once I got myself ready to get sober, I went into residential at Prairie Center. And I went ahead and called the Center for Women in Transition first thing to get on their waiting list so that I would have somewhere to stay, somewhere that was safe to stay as well. To where, you know, I wasn't around the drugs and alcohol anymore. So I got accepted to stay there, and I started living my life of recovery. I got involved with the recovery community here in Champaign, and luckily the Center for Women in Transition let me stay there. I went through an assessment to see if they would let me stay there. They did, and life has been amazing ever since.
Linnell, how long a period did you spend not having a place of your own or a permanent place to stay?
Probably about a year.
A year, which sounds like eternity for me. But.
Yeah. I had places to stay with friends, but they were all using friends, and it was not the life to be living at all.
And in the meantime, as far as anything that requires a permanent address, a place to keep your stuff, things like that?
Yeah, I was living out of my car. I had stuff in friends' houses. I nothing permanent at all.
And were you using drugs at that time, or were you actively trying to get off them during that period?
I have been spending years going in and out of Prairie Center. I knew I needed help. I was willing to do whatever they said to do at Prairie Center, but Prairie Center tries to urge you to get into the recovery community once you get out. I was never willing to do that, and I kept falling off the wagon, and finally I decided to surrender and do what I needed to do, and it's worked.
The period when you were homeless, I don't know what it feels like in that situation. Was it particularly stressful at the time? What were you thinking about how things were going?
You know, my mind was so fogged with all the drugs and alcohol that I was pretty much numb to everything. I was miserable, but also numb at the same time. Yeah, so I just really had to get in somewhere to get me away from my surroundings because everybody I knew used drugs and alcohol. I just didn't know how to live life without it. So I had to actually go into residential to get myself, my head cleared and get sober. And I, you know, I look back on things and it was like living the life of hell, really.
Mm-hmm. Once you had made the decision that you wanted to do something about your situation, how hard was it to find the help?
It was not hard. I knew where to get it. I knew Prairie Center was where I wanted to go back to. I had just never been willing to take their suggestions for when I got out, but I knew I needed to do something, so I was willing to do whatever it was it took and every single thing they told me to do this time. That's where I went mm-hmm. to get my help and did what they said.
During the time that you were homeless, did you know or had you known other people who were homeless as well?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, a lot of people just kind of drifters, you know, just drifting around from place to place, just using people and kind of like living like a parasite, basically.
And did you feel that you were one of those or that you were apart from people like that?
I did feel a little unique and special, I guess, even though I wasn't. It was not the life to be living at all.
Okay. What was your turning point? When did you realize that you had to do something or that you were ready to do something?
Well, you know, I have a 14-year-old daughter that I have not seen in about 7 years. And when I've almost lost my two little ones, they did end up going into foster care. I just decided, you know, I got sick and tired of being sick and tired, and I was ready to grow up, and I said, enough's enough. And I was causing chaos and drama in everybody, all my family's lives, everybody around me. I was being selfish and self-absorbed. And I just decided I did not want to live that way anymore. I wanted to grow up and learn how to live life on life's terms.
So now you're working with the Center for Women in Transition. You have a place to live through them? Or how does the program
work?
Yes,
it's the Affordable Housing Program. When you're at the center, you have goals you got to reach and rules to follow and once you work with an advocate, you got goals you want to reach and everything. And once you do all that, if you successfully complete that, then you qualify to get into the affordable housing program. And
And are there other? You're living in an apartment or a house now?
It's a home. It's a beautiful 3-bedroom home that they've built.
Okay. Do you have custody of your kids now?
Yes, I got custody back. The Center for Women Transition. I could bring my kids, have all my visits with them. I lived in a single unit, and then once I worked my way through the DCFS program, I got my kids back full time. And people at the Center for Women Transition moved me to one of their family units next door. I had a lot of DCFS classes to do, Prairie Center classes. The Center for Women Transition has things to do. I'm not sure how I got it all done, but I did.
Programs or things does the Center for Women in Transition provide for you to do?
One of the things I liked that they did, they held us accountable, and we had to learn to be responsible. We had chores to do, things that we had to do around the house. They also brought in people from the U of I to speak with us. We had classes to do once a week, which I actually missed a lot of those classes because I was so involved with DCFS and all the other stuff I had to do. But they offer a lot of good programs, parenting skills, all kinds of stuff. Yeah.
Okay. So, how many kids you got?
I got two.
Okay.
And I got three. The 14-year-old I have not seen in 7 years, but I have my 7-year-old and my 9-year-old with me now.
Where is the 14-year-old?
She is living in Urbana with mm-hmm. her godmother.
Okay. Do you hope to make contact with her again?
I do.
Okay. So how is life now?
Life is amazing. This is the first time in my entire life where I've had serenity and some peace in my life.
And what hopes or plans do you have for the future?
I just want to keep learning to be a good mother, and I want to stay sober and just keep moving forward and live along the spiritual lines that I've been living today.
Okay. Well, sitting right next to Linnell is Nancy Hyatt, the executive director of the Center for Women in Transition. And I'm just wondering, Nancy, how common is Linnell's story in our area?
It's extremely common. But first, I'd like to say to Linnell, wow, what you have done to turn your life around. It's not easy. It's a lot of hard, hard steps, and it sounds to me like you've taken all the steps that you needed to get where you are today. And congratulations.
Thank you.
Celebrate your life. Wow.
Thank you so much.
So, yes, there's a lot of situations extremely similar to Linnell's that go on in this community. Please know, Jim, that I'm fairly new here. We just moved here a little less than 7 weeks ago, and I've only been on my job. Today is the six-week anniversary of working for the Center for Women in Transition.
I'm just wondering, as far as causes of homelessness, Linnell had was struggling with addiction problems for several years. I hear of other people who are homeless who suffer from mental illness. Are those often, sometimes, mostly the situation that push people into homelessness? Are there other factors?
I would personally say that that's probably 50% of the reason that people are homeless, because of alcohol and drug abuse and because of the mental health issues. The other 50%, as I like to say, that people are victims of circumstances that can happen to more people than most of us want to believe. And by circumstances, I could tell you that if someone loses a job, someone loses a spouse, someone has some physical problems that come up because of injury or long-term type of illnesses, anything that can cause people to lose their ability to work or lose some of the household income. I don't know if people truly realize how many Americans live paycheck to paycheck. And if those or that paycheck is taken away, then what happens? What do they have in the savings? If the savings is slim to none, then who do they go to? And, you know, I think the Great Recession brought out so much of this, and we saw the numbers just skyrocket. People that you would never think could become homeless were homeless because jobs were gone and there were no jobs to go find. So the circumstances have a lot to do with it. And if you ask me, I could give you a list, and then every now and then we hear something brand new that caused someone to become homeless. So there's many reasons.
And we welcome you to the conversation as well here on Focus. If you have a question or a comment you'd like to share, call us here at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. That's 333-WYLL, 800-222-WYLL. You can also email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. And we also welcome your questions on Facebook and Twitter at Focus 580. Beverly Baker, you're with the United Way of Champaign County, so I take it you work with the Center for Women in Transition as far as working. What sort of things does your job entail?
Well, good morning. Thanks for having me here. Yes, United Way does work with Center for Women in Transition, along with many other programs and organizations in the community that work to meet needs. We actually fund several programs at Center for Women in Transition that help them do the work that they do. So,
now the center itself, your target area of service, I take it, is women and with our women with young children.
For our homeless services programs, yes. It's not that we're not sympathetic and empathetic to men who are homeless, but resources are stretched, and we've always focused within our organization on the women and kids. In our domestic violence program, we also include men who are victims of domestic violence.
Okay, but it's specifically on homeless issues you deal with. You deal with women and their young children. Beverly, are there other programs for women specifically in the area who are homeless?
Center for Women in Transition is the main program. There are other services then for men. There's a transition, and that's through the Time Center with community elements. There's also a youth homeless runaway and youth program through community elements called Roundhouse. And then there is Restoration Urban Ministries, which does transitional housing, and that is for men, women, and families. But again, that's transitional, not an emergency situation. And the work that Center for Women in Transition does is also transitional in nature.
And I understood the Salvation Army had some sort of program in the area for homeless men. Is that the case?
Correct. It's called the Stepping Stone Shelter, and that also serves men.
Do you work with that, or do they get their own funding from other
places? We work with them as well.
Okay. And I understood there was a new program for families that just opened up, launched recently?
Correct. We launched it February 1st, and that's in a response to a need for emergency shelter. Again, the work that Center for Women in Transition does and many of the other programs in the community are transitional in nature. But we have these families who come into a situation and it's immediate, and there needs to be an immediate response for it. And so that's what this program has been working to address, is to be that immediate stopgap for families.
Well, which means in your case, Linnell, was there a point where you needed an emergency shelter right now, or were you able to find a place at least to stay until the center was able to find a location for you?
Well, I was in residential at Prairie Center, and actually they let me stay a little longer there until my space came open at Center for Women.
And the residential at Prairie Center, was that, what did that provide?
They provide housing. I was there for about 6 weeks. That's where you live, right there on grounds, and go through all the classes, and yeah.
Okay. And, you know, that's, I can imagine, and even lots of people don't like to be told what to do and to have to answer deadlines and assignments.
Mm-hmm.
Some people maybe even barely tolerate it on the job when they're paid to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're in a stressful situation, when you're trying to convince yourself to make the move out of addictions and dealing with homelessness, it must have been a particular challenge.
Well, you know, it had been in the past when I wasn't truly ready to get sober. I knew I needed help, but I wasn't really ready. So that stuff did affect me. But when I actually became willing, it didn't matter. I was willing to do whatever anybody told me. I was grateful just to be there.
Nancy, maybe you can tell me about some of the other women in the program. First of all, about how many homeless women is the center serving right now?
I will tell you, our main campus for homeless services, we actually have four separate homes, four buildings. And three of the buildings can accommodate five families, so five women and their children. Another one of the properties, we just have four single women who are designated as chronically homeless. So on any given night in the shelters, and sometimes it's just the compositions may be mixed. There may be more single women, and we'll put them in one of the family rooms. And then sometimes we have to move people around as families come in. So many families, let's see, that would be 15 up to 19 women, and then 15 families.
Okay.
On our main campus.
And this sounds like the main program for helping women, but also there are other programs that are also for helping families, like the emergency shelter.
Correct.
That you mentioned. What's the difference in number between the people, homeless men and women receiving services, do you think, and the ones who are not in this area?
Well, I believe that there are a lot of people who are homeless who do not want help. They're not looking for help. And it might be for a variety of reasons. But then there are quite a few others who are looking for help, but because the resources, meaning the rooms that we would have available, are limited, and when we're full at capacity, we then have a waiting list. Right now, we have a waiting list. So then what we try to do is we interact with other homeless agencies throughout Central Illinois. We'll go into Southern Illinois. We'll go into Northern Illinois. Whatever we can do to help women, especially women with kids, get into a shelter situation. We don't want to see anybody out there that's going to be living out of a car, or something of that nature, or heavens forbid that they would be out on a park bench. And yes, that does happen.
And I'm wondering, there seems to be, you could divide it into three rough groups of people who are receiving help, people who are seeking help but have not been able to get it yet, and people who are not looking for help at all. Which group is biggest?
In my opinion, seeking help.
Seeking help.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Who would choose to be homeless except a very small? There is, as I just mentioned, a small population. People want a roof over their heads. They want safety. They want a hot shower, a hot meal. They want a bed to sleep in.
And in some cases, and I don't know, Linnell, if you felt you may have been in that category at one point where you were not seeking help.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'll think of an anecdotal situation. I know that for a period of time, there is a man who was sleeping in the foyer of the Urbana City building. I used to cover the city council meetings, and everybody attending the meetings would see him. I think he was it was essentially a kindness of the police. The Urbana police also have their front desk right there in the city building, that they were letting him stay there. He eventually, I think someone finally decided that, you know, this is not the way things should be going, and found help for him. I think there were some mental health issues involved. But that was a person who was just surviving, I gather. That would be maybe an example of someone in a situation where they were not really seeking help, or at least did not know how to seek help that they would accept.
That's one example, and that's a very extreme case. I think the other side of that seeking help picture would be there are a lot of families and individuals who aren't homeless yet, but they're living a very patchwork existence, much like what Linnell talked about, where she was going from friend's house to friend's house, staying here, staying there, no real stability. And I think we have a lot of families in that situation right now where they're not seeking help yet because they haven't run out of their options yet, but it's a very difficult existence trying to piece together where to stay, especially when you add children into that mix. It's one thing when you let a friend come and sleep on your couch or stay in the spare bedroom. It's another thing when they come with one or more kids. That just adds that much more stress and chaos to your house.
And I'm wondering there that people who are sort of borderline at this point, is that a group that's grown over the past few years with the economy getting worse?
I would say that's a group that through our work at United Way that we've seen grow. And we know that through information and statistics that we get from the Regional Office of Education, which administers a homeless school-age children grant. And so what they're seeing with school-age kids in the school systems here in Champaign County, there are a lot of those families that are couch surfing, so to speak. They're just piecing together that existence.
And the programs for helping the homeless, I've known they've grown in Champaign-Urbana over the years. Do you feel they've kept up, at least in being able to cover the same percentage of people who need help?
Well, I think that all of us are scrambling because the Great Recession threw all of us for a loop. I mean, the numbers skyrocketed, especially the group that Beverly just talked about, those that were taken in by family or friends, that group just went through the roof. The phones at our place were just ringing off the walls, people that were 2 seconds close to being homeless, and then plus those that were actually already out on the street and needed immediate help. Those numbers skyrocketed. So I think as a community, from even though I'm a newbie here, from what I've heard, I think that this community responded as much as they could under the circumstances. Now that we're post-recession, but we're still in a downward economic turn, you still got tons of people out there. And I think that we work together well as a community. I certainly have seen that through the continuum of care and through other groups that are here. I think that all of us are doing our best, but then you've also got the problem that funding has decreased. So need has gone up, funding has gone down. So we're all scrambling to try to do the best that we can.
Has your agency had to downsize under the current funding situation?
Well, once again, just remember, yeah, I'm six weeks on the job.
Well, let me
But the answer is yes.
And let me ask the question of you, Beverly. Have you seen agencies that serve the homeless having to reduce what they offer over the last few years?
Yes. They've either had to reduce it or they've had to change it in some way and offer their services a little bit differently. And I know from – you're talking about funding decreasing. From a local funding standpoint, our investments in shelter and homeless services has increased. It's the funding from the state and federal level that has been decreasing. And at a local level, we can only expand so far. You know, our dollars are limited. There's no way that our investment can make up for the cuts that come from that state and federal level. So we have to be a little creative with our partners and look at the best ways to use that local funding.
I want to take a closer look at the funding picture for helping the homeless. But first, let's take a short break. And we'll be back with more about the problems facing the homeless in Champaign-Urbana and efforts to address the problem. This is Focus on WILL.
After years of dealing with his son's addiction, which he wrote about in his bestseller, Beautiful Boy, David Sheff has written a new book called Clean, about the latest research into addiction and recovery. On the next Fresh Air, Sheff challenges some myths about addiction and recovery and talks about his own experiences as a parent. Join us.
Weekdays at 11 a.m. and at 7 p.m. on AM 580.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Docha, presenting the 2013 Docha Festival, featuring chamber music events and young people's concerts April 5th through April 7th at the Orpheum Theater in downtown Champaign. A complete list of festival performances is at docha.org.
I'm Jim Meadows. We're back on Focus with Beverly Baker of the United Way of Champaign County, Nancy Hyatt of the Center for Women in Transition, and Linnell Loy, a client with the center. And we're talking about homelessness in Champaign-Urbana. You can call us at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. Or email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. We're on Twitter and Facebook at Focus 580. The number again, 333-WILL, or toll-free, 1-800-222-WILL. And I'm wondering if you look at the breakdown of where the money comes from to pay for all this, and I don't even know how much money we're talking about. If we're talking about homeless services in Champaign County, how much is spent on that currently?
Oh, I couldn't even tell you through all of the programs. I mean, millions mm-hmm. of dollars through all of the homeless services in the area.
And there are private contributions. Certainly, the United Way does a lot of fundraising.
We do.
And so a certain amount of money you raise goes for homeless services.
It does, as well as each of these organizations have a fundraising component of their own as well outside of their relationship with United Way. So they receive United Way dollars, but then they also do their own private fundraising as well.
What sort of government funding is also involved, and where does it go?
The big funder would be HUD, Housing and Urban Development, federal funds that flow through the state and then flow through all the different areas within the state. HUD asked years ago that different areas put together a continuum of care. It's all of the homeless service providers. So here in the Champaign-Urbana area, in fact, we just had a meeting yesterday afternoon. So we meet on a regular basis, but the committees, the continuum of care is now responsible for kind of delegating where the HUD funding that flows into this area. And my understanding, even though I'm new, it's around $850,000 from HUD that flows into the continuum of care for the CU area. And our responsibility is to make sure that we disseminate those funds in an equitable way to the agencies that are actually doing the frontline work. The Illinois Department of Human Services have funds available for homelessness. The Illinois Department of Commerce and Economics, Economic Opportunity, they have funding available for the homeless population. So there's different monies out there, but again, those monies have been decreasing steadily since 08, 09, on and on.
They've been going down already. Is there an impact now from federal sequestration, or is there going to be?
You know, we're waiting. We're kind of still waiting on that. But do we expect that there will be a reduction? Absolutely, because that's what Congress is looking at, just snipping the programs. And we do believe that it will go down even further, yes.
The state component, how has that been affected in recent years?
Well, you know, it's gone down as well, and most difficult probably. People can deal with cuts when you know that they're coming. They're not always pleasant, but at least you know about them and you can make some decisions. I think the hardest part, and I'm speaking on behalf of the service providers at this point, so Nancy, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's the not getting payment, you know, being on hold for months and months and months, or being a year behind in getting your payment. You know, those are for services that you've already executed, and you're waiting to get that payment, and not all organizations have a cash flow that they can cover those kind of delays. And in my opinion, I think that's been the most challenging part.
So the planning and budgeting part is really made difficult as far as the operations that you do.
It is, because the payment, you're waiting on it, but your services have to go on.
And the private funding, has that gone up, or has that also been strained by the economy, the donations, contributions?
We have had healthy campaigns through United Way the last several years, even with the challenges in the economy. And we're amazed. Again, the caring power of this community never ceases to amaze us, that people see a need and continue to step up and recognize their situation and give what they can give to help those in need in this community.
And at our agency, I will tell you that beginning in 09, it was like somebody had pulled the plug on private donations. And again, that was because it was the Great Recession. And it's taken years for things to start coming back from individuals and businesses, because people aren't going to give money if their whole financial situation is wobbly. Businesses aren't going to give money if their financial situation is super wobbly. And then there was always donations from churches and just a myriad of places. And all of that, it was just like the faucet was turned off in January of 9. I can remember that at the agency where I was up in Northern Illinois. And we are still trying to rebound from that, because people have to feel confident that their job is safe and secure, that they've got money in the bank in case, heavens forbid, this would ever happen again, meaning another recession. So they have to feel confident, and we are not back to the level of giving coming from individuals and businesses and churches. Even corporations and foundations are way down. So that's been the challenge, because, Jim, I'm sure you can understand that when we're waiting for the check from the state of Illinois for our funds, we still have mortgages to pay, we have heating bills to pay, we have insurance to pay, we have still all of the same expenses that we have to pay. So what Beverly said about organizations finding a challenge with their cash flow, so as an organization, have we learned to tighten up and to live to learn? We've learned to live lean. And that's just the way that it is. And as far as I can tell, and I tell staff this all the time, don't think that it's ever going to go back to the pre-recessionatory times, because it's not. This is the new normal for nonprofit organizations.
And that raises a question. How long do people usually stay, or people receive homeless services?
Well, HUD funding allows families to stay with us for up to 2 years. But I will tell you that the average length of stay runs anywhere from 9 to 12 to 14 months. We would like to see more rapid rehousing, where people come in, they can stay with us. And there is a difference, if your listeners don't know, there is a big difference between emergency housing and transitional housing and permanent supportive housing. And Beverly's program through the United Way addresses emergency. They need something tonight. They need to get in tonight. And they take care of that. Transitional means you can come in with your worldly possessions, depending on, to what extent you may have. With your children, you're going to have a room that you can put all your things in. Then you can stay with us so you can, if you're not employed, you can start looking for employment. If you need to get back into a training program or school, that you can do that. And so you still have this residence, this home that you can come in and out of every day. Usually, and with some of the other types of emergency housing, you can come in at 6 or 7 at night, you get a hot meal, you get a cot to sleep on. You'll get maybe a shower if they have those facilities there. The next morning you get a breakfast. They may give you a bag lunch, and out the door you go. You cannot hang around there during the day. So you can't get on a computer, to look for a job, to take a shower, to go to a job interview, et cetera, et cetera. So transitional housing is going to be more helpful long term.
But at the same time, you want it to be transitional. You want to get people back up on their feet.
Absolutely.
And that's, I was wondering about your situation, Linnell. You must be looking forward to that time when you can get back up on your feet and out of the program.
Yes. And they have steadily been working with me through this, and I have steadily been reaching all my goals and getting close to that to be able to take care of myself.
Okay. So you're looking forward to not too far in the future when
yes.
you'll be out on your own.
Yes.
And you think you can stay that way this time.
Yes, I do, thanks to the Center for Women in Transition and everybody in the community that's helped.
I'm wondering, has the problems with the economy also put a strain on people being able to get back up on their feet, find work, find a permanent place to stay on their own?
Oh, I think so, definitely. I mean, jobs are tight, and a lot of the jobs that are available out there are the minimum wage or just barely above minimum wage, and where people maybe were able to weave together two part-time jobs or two minimum wage jobs or more than that in a family, several people working and working less than full time, but together they were able to put their income together to exist. That's much harder now, though. There's more competition for those jobs, so not everybody can weave together multiple jobs at this time. So, and our money, our income is going down, but everything costs more. And so, your income maybe has stayed the same, but your costs are going up. So, gas is so much higher. Rent goes up. Utilities go up. Our food costs. Oh, my gosh, a trip to the grocery store. Mm-hmm. So your income, if you've been fortunate, has stayed level, but your other expenses have gone up. And so those are definite challenges for people out there.
And I'm wondering, what do you find as you have clients who are trying to get back into their own housing? What's the cost of housing in this area compared to other places? Does having a gigantic university here raise overall housing prices?
Well, I can tell you, coming from Northern Illinois, where the housing was higher, it's more doable here, but it's still high because the wages are lower than they were in Northern Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
So as Beverly was talking about people weaving together one, two, three jobs, that's why we're now huge proponents of affordable housing, because people are out there working. But it may be one, two, or three part-time jobs, but they've weaved that together, they've put that together, so they have some income. But if they have to designate the majority of that income to housing, then how are they going to buy the groceries? How are they going to pay for gas to get to and from work? So we need affordable housing. And that, in my short time here as a newbie, I can still see that the rents are still high for the wages in this area. So therefore, the need for affordable housing. And I will tell you that that's what the Center for Women in Transition, we're moving more with partnerships like with the City of Champaign, et cetera. And we always have great partnerships with the City of Urbana as well. So we are moving forward to have more affordable housing.
And that's definitely something. I mean, it takes a while to move in that direction. But I must say, again, our work, Nancy and I, both through the Continuum of Care and the Council of Service Providers to the Homeless, which is another grassroots group here in the community, there's great partnerships with our local cities and the housing authority to look at those issues and try and figure out what can be done. But, you know, it's not a problem that can be solved overnight, so it does take time. But it's definitely on their radar screen, and it's definitely an issue that's being looked at.
I know most of the population of Champaign County is in the cities, in Champaign and Urbana. But if you look at things proportionately, is there also a rural homelessness problem?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's just not it's not seen as much. But there definitely is still an issue in our rural communities. I think, again, because it's not as visible, people don't know that it's there. And a lot of people will move out to the rural communities because the cost of living is a little bit less out there. The rent may be less, but then other costs are increased. That transportation of getting into town, you're spending more gas to get into town, and you don't have the bus and things like that available to you. So there are challenges for families that live in the rural parts of this county.
I'm wondering then, do the programs serving the homeless here have clients from rural areas as well as Champaign-Urbana?
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And as Beverly mentioned earlier, and as what we have found is this, homeless people will travel around trying to seek shelter, those that want to shelter. And if, let's just say for an example, they're over in Danville. Danville is full. Then they're going to start coming towards Champaign-Urbana area. We're full. Then they're going to head on over to Bloomington-Normal. People from Chicago area where the shelters can get full really quickly, they'll start filtering down into northwest Indiana and going southwest through the state of Illinois. People are going to look for shelters, and that's why we all have a network where, and we tell people, if they're on our waiting list, you need to get on other waiting lists as well, so that whoever calls you first, that you can get to the shelter, because again, it's about getting to safety and security.
This is Focus. I'm Jim Meadows, and there's still time for your questions about homelessness in Champaign-Urbana with Beverly Baker of the United Way of Champaign County, Nancy Hyatt of the Center for Women in Transition, who was just speaking, and Linnell Loy, a client with the center. You can call us at 333-9455 or 1-800-222-9455. Email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. And that was an interesting point you just made there, Nancy, that the homeless population is mobile just as they're looking for relief, so that people you're serving may not be from originally around here.
That is true. But I will tell you that overwhelmingly, if I went and did a census taking right now in our shelters, I would tell you that probably 95% is from the Champaign-Urbana area. We like to give priority to our local folks. But at the same time, you know, we provide services to the homeless population, and we don't care if they come from Timbuktu, wherever they're from, and if we have an opening. But again, we always have a waiting list, and we come down that waiting list. We're very fair about it. But unfortunately, the homeless population also, they may have a cell phone one day, and when they go on the waiting list, they give you that cell phone number. But then if it's a month or 2 months, maybe it's only a week, and we're able to call them to then go through an assessment situation to say we have an opening, that cell phone has been turned off. So they can be very challenging to try to find them. And then we have to just keep going down the list to the next person, because we always want to turn over when somebody has been able to move on into their own housing. We want to get someone who's homeless into our shelter as soon as possible.
For the public at large, for people in general, how visible is the homeless population? I mean, I actually think they fielded a question before the show today about someone not seeing homeless people, at least on the U of I campus. Would you know? I mean, is it something that would be very obvious in a lot of cases? If for to be able to tell who's homeless and who's not?
I think in those very severe situations, like you were talking about the gentleman that slept in the doorway of, in the city of Urbana, you know, you're going to see that. But otherwise, no, because a lot of these families and individuals that are homeless, like Linnell, they're working. They're out there trying to, you know, keep themselves and their family going. So they look just like you and I do. We don't know where they're going to lay their head down at night. So, you know, I think they look like everybody else, but it's definitely there if you know where to look.
Okay. I think perhaps what for some what might be an example of a visible symbol would be, well, for instance, in certain parts of Champaign-Urbana, campus town and downtown Champaign, you'll see a certain amount of begging going mm-hmm. on. And can you assume the people who are doing that are actually homeless?
No.
No.
I can tell you I've been out to Walmart East many times shopping, and just a Sunday or two ago, there was a young man that was begging in front of the store, and my understanding is the manager came out and had him move on. But as my husband and I were going inside, I just kind of hollered over. I said, "Are you hungry?" And he said, "Yes," because I will not give money to panhandlers. But if he said he was hungry, so we went in and we got a little bag of food for him, and my husband took it out to him, and he was very appreciative. By the time we finished our shopping and came out, he was gone. But once again, we had heard that the manager had asked him nicely to move on. So, you know, I think for those of us that are providers for the homeless population, I think we are able to eyeball people more and know who probably is homeless, just because we're used to it.
Mm-hmm. There are things that there are cues that
yes.
give you
yes.
some idea.
Yes, absolutely.
I'm wondering for people who are listening right now or who may be listening to this later on the website, whatever situation they're in, if they are homeless, if they fear they are on the verge of becoming homeless, if they know someone in that situation, here in the Champaign-Urbana area and Champaign County, what can they do? What are the steps to take to seek help?
I think the first thing they need to do is they can call First Call for Help at Family Service, and that is a great resource in the community to be able to connect them to the resources that we do have.
Family Service, and maybe you can talk a little bit about that agency and how they're set up to provide assistance.
Sure. Well, First Call for Help is an information and referral program. So it's a database of all the resources and programs available in the community for a variety of needs, everything from, you know, help with your power to a list of the food pantries in the community to the different services that are available. And so you can call them and they'll connect you to the services that we have.
So First Call for Help is a program that Family Services operates?
Correct.
Okay. I'm at their website now, and that website is, if I can pull it down here on the screen, that's famservcc.org. A little tricky, famservcc.org. I'm trying to see if there's a particular phone number here, and I'm afraid it's not coming to me immediately. But there is a contact page. And what I do see, just for the general number for Family Services, it is 217-352-0099. That may not be the number for a First Call for Help.
But it's there. They'd get them connected.
Okay. So for starters, 217-352-0099, main number for Family Service, and a way to get hold of the First Call for Help, which is a way to essentially direct people to the sort of help they need if they're facing homelessness or fear they may be on the verge or know someone who is here in the Champaign-Urbana area.
Correct.
And there's always the challenge there between being able to get emergency services when there's an emergency or trying to do something preventive so you're not quite in that situation.
Exactly. And unfortunately, there's not as many programs to help in that prevention piece, so to speak. I know we get a lot of calls at our United Way office for people who need help with rent assistance or back utility bills, and that's a challenge. There's a limited number of programs out there that can do that, and so you know I encourage people who are listening is to be proactive. Most of those utilities and most landlords will work with you if you make them aware of a situation and work out a payment plan instead of letting those bills just back up and completely ignoring them. If you're paying something towards them, you're buying yourself a little bit of time. And I know that is one of the greatest needs, one of the greatest calls that we get is help paying off very large back utility bills. And then it's a hindrance for people being able to secure other housing in the future is if they have back bills or have had something turned off until that is paid off and rectified, they're not able to get utilities turned on in a new location. So
I'm wondering, with a problem that seems to be growing, you're doing your best to help people who need help, but the problem's not going down or not going away. What do you think would be the key to doing something about the root causes of homelessness? This is the big picture question, which I know can be especially difficult when you're dealing with things on a day-to-day basis.
And it's hard. That root cause is multifaceted, but it's much less expensive to invest in prevention services and things that happen earlier rather than reacting to things later. Education is a huge part of it, and making sure that we have the mental health services and the substance abuse services that we need, because those are often the factors that lead to homelessness. Like Nancy said, you know, about roughly 50%. Of the individuals that they see have a substance abuse or a mental health connection to their homelessness. And then just that education so that you can get a job and be flexible enough to be able to change jobs when the economy throws you for a loop and your employment suddenly changes. You know, those are definite factors. And so as a community, we need to look at those.
Nancy Hyatt, we're down to our last minute here, but if you had a magic wand, or at least a magic funding wand, what would you like to see done to try to make the problem smaller?
Poverty is a great reason for the problem, and as Beverly said, it's the undereducation of the American public. So we need to look at what is it going to take to make people more educated so that they can secure a decent job and keep a decent job. So a magic wand, well, gosh, I guess it would be that everybody in the United States of America, that no one lived in poverty, that no one was hungry, that no one was homeless. And I'm not naive, Jim, so I know it's going to take a lot of hard work as a country for all of us to come together to help those who are less fortunate. We've always been great about that in this country. We've always lent a helping hand, a hand up, not necessarily a hand out, to help folks who have fallen on rough times.
Well, that pretty much puts us out of time here on Focus. Linnell Loy, thank you very much for coming on the program today and talking about your situation.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
I wish you the very best of good fortune in the future. And my thanks also to Nancy Hyatt, Executive Director of the Center for Women in Transition, and Beverly Baker, Director of Community Impact at the United Way of Champaign County. Tomorrow on Focus, you can call them unmanned aerial vehicles if it makes you feel better. But tomorrow's show is about drones, not the military kind, but civilian drones. We'll be talking about how drones may be used in civilian life. Today's show produced by Lindsay Moon, and Jason Croft is our technical director. This is Focus on WILL. I'm Jim Meadows.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
Good Wednesday morning, everyone. This is Dave Dickey with a look at the commodities, where wheat futures are higher today, boosted by concerns about poor crop conditions in the plains, as well as some technical buying. Traders are purchasing futures after disappointing rains in parts of Texas, Oklahoma, and southern Kansas yesterday. as the region's wheat crop still faces severe drought conditions and will need continued moisture to develop healthier. Also, following the USDA quarterly grains stock report last Friday, where wheat futures had a significant drop, it is possible that bottom bargain hunters are snatching up some wheat futures on technical considerations. Let's go ahead and look at the particulars in Kansas City, where May wheat is 727 and a quarter, up 10 and a half. July, 734 and a quarter, up 10. May wheat in Chicago, 686 and a half, up 15 and three quarters. Now 16 and a quarter. July, 692 and three quarters, up 15 and a half. Wheat regaining today its premium over corn. May corn, 641 and three quarters, up one and a quarter. July at 630, up two and three quarters. And December at 539, up two and a half. May soybeans, 1384 and a half, down nine and a half. July, 1361 and a quarter, down 13 and a quarter. And November at 1233 and a half, down 15 and a quarter. May soybean meal, 397.50, down 460. May soybean oil at 49.56, down 3 cents. You're listening to Illinois Public Media, WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM, HD3 Urbana.